Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Now that we've heard how some Illinois school districts are planning to reopen, we wanted to look at examples from elsewhere on how to safely and effectively go back to school. By June, more than 20 countries had reopened schools, and some, like Taiwan, Sweden, Nicaragua, never closed in the first place. Can we find a blueprint in those examples for answers to questions like, how likely are children to catch and transmit the virus? Should my kids be able to play at recess? And should kids wear masks? Science Magazine talked to infectious disease experts around the world and looked at school reopening strategies in nations as varied as South Africa, Finland, and Israel. From that, there are some patterns from which schools can learn. Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation. Our lines are open. The number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Make yourself heard on this issue. Do you feel good about sending your kids back to school? Do you have concerns about some of the guidelines you've gotten from your local school district? Or are you still trying to decide between virtual instruction or sending them in person? Give us a call, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. You can always tweet us also at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. Joining us now are two of the reporters who worked on that Science Magazine piece, which, by the way, is called School Openings Across the Globe Suggest Ways to Keep Coronavirus at Bay Despite Outbreaks. We have Jennifer Cousin-Frankel, a staff writer at Science, and Gretchen Vogel, contributing correspondent for Science, who's based in Berlin. Hello, Jennifer and Gretchen. Thanks for joining us today on the 21st.
Thanks for having us.
And still with us is Peter Medlin, education reporter for WNIJ and host of the Teachers Lounge podcast. Thanks for staying on with us, Peter.
Thanks for continuing to have me.
And Jennifer, I want to start with you. In Science, in the piece, you looked at reopening strategies across the world, and you point out differences on things like how much contact is allowed between children, masking requirements, and the response. How does a school or school district respond when a student or teacher is diagnosed with COVID-19? What are the factors that matter when schools make these considerations?
Thanks, Brian. These are really difficult questions, as I think everyone recognizes now. What we felt, what we saw in our reporting was that the choices schools made depended somewhat on what was happening in their wider community. So in regions where there was less spread of the virus, which was the case in generally in the places that did reopen, they were able to modulate some of the precautions that they used. We also found that different regions sort of embraced different approaches. So some places really embraced mask use, even among young kids. Some places really focused on keeping kids apart. And finally, we found that schools changed their strategy as they went along. They watched how things worked, and then they made adjustments as seemed appropriate.
Do we know if schools are spreading the virus to the wider community? Are they sort of a vector point? Jennifer?
Yes, I think that's something else we looked at. There were hints of that. I think Israel is an example where there may have been spread from schools to the broader community. One of the challenges, though, in kind of tracing this is that schools tend to open when other things open in a region. So if you then start to see a spike in cases, it's hard to know, did that come from schools? Did that come from restaurants? Did that come from people going back to work? And that's something that can be difficult to trace, especially when you're not doing extensive testing and contact tracing of cases.
Yeah. And Jennifer, the article also makes the point that when looking at school reopenings, that there are some encouraging patterns emerging. I'm wondering if you can talk about what are some of those encouraging patterns that you saw?
Yes, we definitely saw some hopeful patterns in other countries that had reopened schools. I think that schools that embraced masking, distancing, small groups, teaching outdoors, those are some of the really, the strategies that we know work to reduce spread of the virus. And you know, the more you embrace them, the better off you may be, especially if spread in the community is at manageable levels. So, you know, we did see that was the case. There are also open questions, I think, about how much kids transmit the virus. And even since we wrote the piece, the research is moving so fast that research has continued to evolve. But there are some hints that younger kids may spread the virus a little bit less than older kids? That's something, though, that's still a kind of an open question out there.
Yeah, and I've tried to keep up with that research myself, and you're right. It seems to change by the week, if not the day, in some cases. Gretchen, I want to bring you into the conversation here. You contributed to the Science Magazine article as well. You're actually on the ground in Berlin, in Germany right now, where schools, as I understand it, are reopened. What does that look like?
Yeah, today was the first day back to school for most of the kids in Berlin. And unlike the spring, where most schools across Germany did follow some of the things that Jennifer mentioned with much smaller groups, keeping students as far apart as possible, wearing masks in the hallways, though not necessarily in the classroom. As schools open this fall, some of those safety measures have been put aside. And in Berlin, for example, schools opened with full classes, full schedules all day. They are requiring masks in hallways, but again, not during class when kids are sitting at their desks. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, I mean, I know you just said it's the first day back, but do we have a sense of what is and isn't working based on maybe things that have been tried elsewhere?
It's hard to say. What they did in the spring seemed to work well in that there were not large outbreaks. There were a few isolated outbreaks, but they were able to find them quickly and keep them under control. Hopefully that will continue to be the case. In one state in the north of the country that opened schools last week, they already found two positive cases, one in a teacher and one in a student. And then those schools did close down for half a week so that they could test everyone and see who else was infected and keep those people isolated and then let everybody else go back, hopefully. I would say it's a big experiment, the way Germany's approaching the fall. And I personally have two kids going into sixth and ninth grade, and I have mixed feelings about it, I have to admit.
Yeah. So. I wonder, was having them do sort of virtual instruction even an option for you or something you consider?
No. In fact, Germany has a law that requires children to go to school. You can't just decide to keep them home. They do have an option for children who have medical reasons where they might have especially high risks related to the virus, and then you can get a doctor's excuse. But you can't just decide to keep your child at home.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. So. Well, thanks for sharing that. Peter, I want to bring this conversation back home to Illinois, so to speak. How are districts here approaching some of these questions on how to conduct school if they are doing it in person, mask requirements, that sort of thing?
Yeah, you're seeing those mask requirements. I think, like I mentioned earlier, you're seeing some schools that are especially in middle and high school ages, splitting students into like A groups and B groups so they can limit the amount of people within classes. I think that the argument for elementary school is that, you know, they're going to be one small group of people with the same teacher all day. Masks. I know that there are districts where they're saying that, you know, they want teachers to limit the amount of time they spend with an individual student really up close with them. And a lot of stuff like that, a lot of half days, so they won't have to have lunch or periods where you'll have to not be wearing a mask. Or if they are going full days, then, you know, splitting up people where there could be some kids eating lunch in the lunchroom, but there could be some in a classroom or a library or something like that.
But we are seeing a range of different approaches in Illinois, right? We heard about other districts where it's going to be all virtual, at least for the first quarter. Can you talk about what's behind those decisions?
Yeah, I think that a lot of it has to do with those districts that are going virtual for the first, you know, until October or whatever that looks like. It is a lot about, you know, concerns about rising rates. And then it's also concerns about, are we going to be able to do social distancing? Are we going to be able to make sure the airflow, the air quality in the building is good? What if you're teaching elementary school in a classroom that maybe doesn't have windows? Does that make people even more hesitant? And definitely a lot of pushback from teachers, either saying, you know, we don't think that the social distancing is possible, or that, you know, they still might even have questions if there's a blended option of are teachers going to have to handle in-person classes and then also work up separate lesson plans for online students and what that's going to look like. So there's still a lot of questions. And like you said, a range of options across the state.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're looking at school reopenings abroad in countries like Germany, Israel, South Africa, and what schools here in Illinois might be able to learn from those places where schools have already reopened or, in some cases, never even closed. We're talking with two reporters from Science magazine, Jennifer Cousin-Frankel and Gretchen Vogel, who contributed to a recent article there called School Openings Across the Globe Suggest Ways to Keep Coronavirus at Bay Despite Outbreaks. And we also have with us Peter Medlin, education reporter for WNIJ and host of the Teacher's Lounge podcast there. Listeners, we can take your calls. The number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. How do you feel about your school's reopening guidelines? Are there things you'd like done differently? Call us if you have comments or if you have a question for any of our guests. The lines are open. The number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455, or you can always tweet us at 21st Show. Jennifer, one quote from your article that jumped out at me was from Otto Helve, I think I'm saying that right, a pediatric infectious disease expert in Finland you spoke with, who said, "Outbreaks in schools are inevitable, but there is some good news." Should it worry parents and teachers that outbreaks are inevitable? And you know, to that point, what is the good news there?
I think that's one of the first part, that outbreaks are inevitable, is one of the hardest pieces about this. We can't guarantee safety in schools right now, especially in the U.S. And I think it's unfair in a way to expect schools to guarantee that. So, you know, we're balancing our own risk tolerance, our assessment of the safety measures that schools and our communities are taking. And then, you know, if we have a choice, doing our best to make that choice. So I think that's what he was referring to. You know, the virus is out there and we're gathering people together. Some schools are going to have outbreaks somewhere. In terms of the good news, you know, like I was saying before, I think there are things that schools and especially communities can do to mitigate those risks. And in the schools that did reopen in Europe and Asia and Canada and elsewhere, in general, things went pretty smoothly to start. So that itself is heartening.
And you looked at the case of a school in France where there had been an outbreak really before we really knew how widespread COVID-19 was. This was Crépy-en-Valois, if I'm saying that right. What can we learn from that example?
I think this is Gretchen.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, no, I was the one who spoke with the researchers who did that fascinating study. No, it's okay. And I think one of the things that was the real takeaway from there was this hint of good news that probably elementary school children are less likely to spread the virus than older children. We're not 100% sure about that, but this was a strong hint that might be the case. They tested a couple of teachers who had ended up with COVID before anybody knew that it was spreading in the town. And it turned out that they had sparked a quite large outbreak in the high school where they taught. They also then went back and tested, several hundred students and parents and siblings from the elementary schools in that town, and they found very little spread in the elementary schools. That's no guarantee, but it was a glimmer of hope that maybe younger kids might be less likely to spread the virus than older kids.
Okay.
That's good news because it can be harder to work with younger kids and have them keep all the distance and keep their masks on and follow all the rules that older kids are better at following.
Yeah, and for those of us in the States, I can also say it's pretty hard to get kids to focus on a Zoom window for, you know, a half hour, let alone multiple hours a day in their instruction.
Absolutely. The older kids are a little bit better at doing the remote learning than the younger kids.
Yeah, and we've got a caller on the line, Todd in Jacksonville. Welcome to the 21st. I understand you have mixed feelings about keeping your kids at home, whether or not to keep kids at home.
I've got mixed feelings, but I think there's only one choice. You know, I want my kid to socialize and become normal with friends and things like that. But I think as long as there's a responsible home available with a responsible adult that's there during the day and can keep the kids at home, it's a no-brainer. You should keep the kids safe.
Do you think what about the academic cost? Is that a concern that kids are just not learning as well?
I think if there's a responsible adult in a responsible home, they'll learn fine online. As long as the game plan is to do that and not just ignore the child.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Todd, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your views on the 21st. I wonder, you know, is this sort of virtual experiment? Is that something that, I mean, we heard in earlier, Jennifer, that, or Gretchen, I should say, in Germany, that online education is not even an option. Are there countries that are doing more virtual learning and keeping kids at home more instead of sending them in?
As in Illinois, it seems that plans change in various places every day. So I, sure, to be honest, have lost track of what, for example, the Netherlands or Denmark are doing. But I think across Europe, most countries have decided to go back in person this fall. That's in part because overall the numbers of new cases are so much lower here than in the US. And so there is slightly less risk of, if you have the virus under control in the community at large, it's a lot easier to open schools safely. And yeah, as I mentioned, in Germany, they're doing the experiment of opening everything up and having full classes, full days, but they do say they may switch back to a hybrid plan if outbreaks become too frequent or too big.
Yeah. And having the virus under control in the community, that's something where America is just doing so much worse than the rest of the world, it seems. Just a huge share of the confirmed cases are happening here. We're going to continue this conversation. We need to take a short break here. We've been speaking with Gretchen Vogel and Jennifer Cousin-Frankel, who are respectively a contributing correspondent and staff writer at Science Magazine, as well as Peter Medlin, education reporter for WNIJ. We're also taking your calls. We have another caller on the line. Please, Mike, stick around until after the break. You can join him, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st. More to come after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about school reopening plans, both in Illinois, but more to the point in this conversation, abroad, and what we can learn from how schools in countries as varied as South Africa, Finland, Israel, Taiwan, Sweden, Nicaragua, some that closed schools and reopened, some that never closed at all, what we can learn from them. We're speaking with a couple of reporters who wrote a piece for Science Magazine about this very topic. Jennifer Cousin-Frankel is a staff writer there, and Gretchen Vogel is a correspondent for Science who's based in Berlin. And we're also speaking with Peter Medlin, education reporter at WNIJ and host of the Teacher's Lounge podcast there. And we have a caller on the line. You can always join our conversations, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Mike in Champaign, welcome to the 21st. Good morning.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Great program. Thank you. My concerns basically, I think, were covered quite well by Gretchen when she said that, you know, if communities are doing well, then probably schools are going to do well. And I think, you know, basically trying to open schools when you have a positive rates, 3%, 5%, or 7%, really doesn't make any sense, because I think they'll just basically send kids to school that have been exposed. And I think you covered that issue pretty well.
Okay.
I thank you. It was a great program.
All right. Well, thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling in. And please call back again. The number is 800-222-9455. Gretchen, I wonder, is there anything else to say about this idea of community spread and how it affects the schools? I mean, are there places where, schools reopened and maybe had to backtrack because they were a little too hasty or too eager to get kids back into schools, and then, you know, there were outbreaks?
Jennifer can talk about this too.
Oh, sure.
Israel is really the sort of poster child for what happened, where they really opened schools without too many precautions, and then cases did really go back up. As she said at the beginning, it's hard to separate that out. Everything opened at the same time, so whether it was stores or weddings or other things that were driving the increase in cases, or whether it was primarily schools, that can be hard to be really sure about. But there was some circumstantial evidence that opening the schools did contribute to some of the spread.
Yeah, I would add to that, Israel was one of the few countries we found that opened in full. So there was a lot of pressure there to get the schools back up and running. And they brought everybody back full time. They did require masks for most of the kids, except for the youngest ones. And their classes are fairly large, 30 to 40 kids. And they did start to have cases in schools. I just want to add another point to what your caller was saying, the very good point the caller was making, in thinking about the community, is the role of testing here. So many countries, and Germany is one, Canada is another, the testing is very readily available. The results come back very quickly, within a day or two at most, for most people. And that's really not the case right now in many parts of the U.S. where it's very uneven. I will say, on a personal level, my husband and I were recently tested in advance of seeing some older relatives. We wanted to be careful and responsible and get tested. And it took 8 and 9 days, respectively, for our test results, which were negative, to come back. And I think if you have a situation like that, where the time it takes for test results is very uneven, in some places it is quick, depends which drugstore you go to, it also makes it more difficult to open schools, because if a child or a person working in the school is positive, and if it takes even 4 or 5 days for them to get results, it also becomes harder to contain the spread in the school. So that's something that may certainly improve with time in the States, but it is a concern right now.
Yeah, and what a contrast. I mean, we had a conversation on the show a couple weeks ago. The University of Illinois, in order to bring students back, is planning, they developed their own saliva test in-house, so it's not invasive. It's relatively easy to do. If you want to access campus facilities, I think you have to get tested twice a week. They're processed on campus. Results are supposed to be available within a matter of hours. Peter, have we heard about testing in Illinois schools? Is that part of the plan at all, or is there even any sort of capacity for that?
Certainly nothing like at what you were talking about with U of I. And I think that the question of what happens if a student tests positive is still, you know, extremely relevant. And there isn't a one solid answer for that. And I think in a lot of places you are seeing, like, you know, if it's in elementary school, if one student tests positive, there are some districts that are saying that, you know, maybe we would just have to isolate and have that one student quarantine. And, you know, if other students show symptoms, they would as well. There are other people that are saying, well, then we'd have to have that whole class and their teachers quarantine for, you know, up to 2 weeks, whatever, the deferring to their local health department. But yeah, no, there isn't a one single baseline solution, and definitely not something as comprehensive that you see as U of I.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we need to kind of bring this conversation to a close. But Jennifer, I want to end with this. I'm curious if in your research and reporting, you found that countries around the globe are relying maybe a little more on scientists and experts to drive reopening guidelines, whereas here in the U.S., the idea of, you know, relying on science has been somewhat politicized, and we have experts like Anthony Fauci being met with skepticism, even apparently death threats from part of the population. I wonder if you have any observations about, you know, the politicization of the response to COVID-19 here versus how it's being handled in other countries.
I think, you know, unfortunately, that is, I would generally agree with you, that's the case. That's not to say that there aren't going to be political pressures in other countries, and also financial pressures. You know, when we talk about how can we make schools as safe as they can be, that costs a lot of money. And it's a challenge here in the States, but it's also a challenge for other countries. So we're not alone, I think, in that controversy. But I do think we are an outlier in relying less on science, respecting science less, and also having less consistent messaging to help the population as a whole do all it can to combat this virus and help schools reopen safely ultimately.
Okay. We're going to have to leave it there. Our guests have been Jennifer Cousin-Frankel, a staff writer at Science, Gretchen Vogel, a contributing correspondent for Science Magazine, and Peter Medlin, education reporter at WNIJ and host of the Teacher's Lounge podcast. Jennifer, Gretchen, Peter, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.